Doot, y'all. It's The Conversation. It's Wednesday. It's 9 a.m. It's time for us to hang out with each other. My name's Graham. I'm your host today. Happy to be here as always. And today's going to be a fun one because we do have a special guest. I will introduce him in just a moment. But first, I want to thank Kathleen for hosting the morning news today. And thank you for tuning in. As usual, we like to start the show with an icebreaker just to get the phones ringing. We've got Reed out in the lobby. He's answering the calls today and passing them into the air room. Thank you, Reed. And the number to call, if you would like to join the conversation, is 503-325-0010. Today's topic is storytelling, and we've got a storyteller with us today. And so I thought as our icebreaker, just to warm up those phone lines, we could pose the question of what your favorite childhood story was. And I would also accept an answer of who your favorite childhood storyteller was. Your favorite childhood story or your favorite childhood storyteller. I remember Little Golden Books. I remember Go, Dog, Go. I remember What Do People Do All Day by Richard Scarry. And I do remember also one of the most profound storytelling experiences of my childhood was when I attended what we called outdoor science school in the sixth grade. And the counselor for my cabin was a young Native American gentleman who had the knack for storytelling. Stories preserve culture, pass on cultural knowledge from one generation to another. In essence, stories keep cultures alive. Stories provide a timeless link to ancient traditions, legends, myths, and archetypes. They also connect us to universal truths about ourselves and our world. My guest today is Mike Arsenal, and he says, you can't know where you're going if you don't know where you came from. Whoops, still got the theme music rocking. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Graham. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And like I said, just because I've got a guest doesn't mean you can't call. You can join the conversation and have a chat. Mike here is on Zoom. So we've got two open phone lines, and we're ready and happy to take your calls. So, Mike, you're on the show because you are in the process of releasing a book. Is that right?
Yeah, the book has been released. So it was released July 9th, and it's now out in stores. And I'm doing the local book network with a lot of events. I have my official launch coming up this Saturday at the Historic Boathouse in Garibaldi, which is a project that has also been very close to me in terms of cultural and heritage preservation. So I'm excited to be here and excited about the response to the book. Thanks.
Yeah, and so we should maybe start with kind of an overview of the book itself. I know what the book's about, but I don't know that all of our listeners do. So do you want to kind of share what got you started and what you ended up with?
Yeah, so first, I guess I live in Rockaway Beach. That's where my primary residence is. And I've been a resident for just over 11 years. But I've been very involved in our community with a lot of different projects, mostly focusing on elevating arts and culture. The book that I've just launched is called Storytelling. And what it is, it's basically photography and design driven, because that's my background as a sort of a designer and photographer. But I basically work with a variety of locals in the community to understand and the stories that were important to them. And certainly as somebody who's lived out here, I think we all recognize that, you know, the communities were robust back in the day, and there's a lot of great places that have such historical and heritage significance that a lot of people who are moving out here now or the next generation don't really understand a lot of the stories of the past. So this book is basically a photo guide or an armchair guide to places of significance. To me, again, there are a variety of other places, but places of historical and cultural significance to me that I have learned about or that I've discovered over the last 10 years. And it goes everything. There's the book is in three chapters. The first chapter is on Rockaway Beach, which has a very sort of a very storied history, being founded in 1909. So it kind of looks at Rockaway Beach from the past, the present, and the future. And then I take you on a journey from Tillamook right up to Astoria. So starting with things like the Blimp Museum, or Hangar B as it's known, up to the Astor Tower or Liberty Theater. I've been involved in theater arts as well for a long time. So I really wanted to embrace the places and spaces that I think are interesting. Many of these are gone today, but some of them are still there, and or there's traces of them there. And I think it's important for people who visit the Northern Oregon coast to really understand the past, because I think only by understanding the past can we actually impact and change the future.
Yeah, and are you saying that the future could use a change?
I would say I think change is always good, as long as change is doing something better, not just doing something different. So I think, again, coming here, I know that, you know, I've been involved in a lot of things where I really want to connect the communities. One of the unique things that I've discovered, and I'm sure a lot of people know, is, you know, a lot of people don't go outside their small towns, but if you think of the Oregon coast, it's really not such a large distance to the Northern Oregon coast that there's so many things to do and explore if you get in your car and drive 5 minutes. So I've been very involved through heritage, through culture, through food, through theater, to connect communities and bring people together, because I think it makes us a more connected and more vital community. And by doing that, I understand that there is a desire for people to do more things and, you know, and to really get together and celebrate community. And I think a lot of the stories, I bring up the Natatorium, and I actually refer to two Natatoriums in the book, one being, the Natatorium, as it's known, was a heated saltwater swimming pool, and they used to dot the coast on the Oregon coast. The last remaining Natatorium is actually the Seaside Aquarium, but being Rockaway, we actually had one as well, on a large Natatorium that was destroyed in 1967. But it's interesting to know that the pool, when they collapsed the walls on the Natatorium when it was destroyed, they actually covered over top of it. Now it's the wayside or the parking lot right behind the red caboose. But below that parking lot is the pool to the Natatorium. And when you tell people that story, it's like, oh, wow, it's really interesting. People get fascinated about what was here before and also what potentially, you know, what these icons represented to our community and how we as a community can step up and kind of create what we want for the future.
Yeah, can you imagine the anthropologists 300 years in the future digging down below a layer of asphalt and then finding a...
Exactly.
And trying to make sense of it. Well, I love the concept of celebrating community and preserving history. You had mentioned the episode that we did not too long ago on historic preservation, and it seems like that's a big focus for you as a storyteller. It's not just about a plot, but it's about a plot that that you can go stand on and see and interact with and
exactly. Yeah, I mean, and I mean, I'll be the first to say I don't consider myself an historian. I will consider myself a storyteller first. Mm-hmm. And what's unique about my book, Storytelling, is that it doesn't go deep into the history. It does invite you to kind of go out and find out more. And it's also connected to a Facebook group where I continue to tell stories. So it's an ongoing process, even though there's a book out there, but I continue to engage the community. And it's amazing how many people who have been in this area that have moved away, that have come back now, or are finding out about these groups in this book and really remembering sort of, you know, have such fond memories for their time here. So, and I also think what's unique about the book is that it's very photography led. So it's looking at the past, looking at today, and then imagining what the future can be. Because I think, I'm a visual learner. I've used a lot of the history books and referred to a lot of local historians. I worked a lot with Don Best, who was sort of our, you know, very well-known photographer and archivist in Rockaway Beach. And I had a couple of gallery exhibitions that I worked with him on. So that's where I got to know him. And you know, he was also a big inspiration to me learning the past of Rockaway. And originally this book was going to be just on Rockaway, but you know, as I started to do that, I discovered all these other places like the Peter Iredale, like the Emily Reed shipwreck that only appears, you know, once or twice every 10 years on Rockaway Beach. There's so many interesting places. And then I think my vital involvement in sort of helping to reimagine the historic Coast Guard boathouse on Tillamook Bay that we reopened in 2018 really sparked, you know, the ability to say, I think that understanding the past, understanding these historic structures and then reimagining them for the future is actually possible.
Do you have a sense for whether those natatoriums were mostly frequented by like a strong local population, or was it a tourist getaway for the then thriving metropolis of Portland in the early 1900s? Or who was in Rockaway Beach?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were primarily designed for, I mean, they are what I would call, refer to them now as the community hub. You know, the closest we have in our area, honestly, is the North County Recreation District, or NCRD, which is in Nehalem, and it has a swimming pool. It has an art gallery. It has a theater, which I've performed at, but it's also an educational facility. They have a gym. So those types of kind of meeting hubs or meeting facilities, community hubs, don't exist any longer. And when I started talking about natatoriums, I would hear all the stories about the locals. It's like, this is where people learned to swim. This is where they had their first dance. So the Rockaway Beach Natatorium, for example, you know, wasn't just a heated saltwater swimming pool. Over the years, it had a bowling alley, a pool hall, a beautiful, you know, oceanfront restaurant. It was very much ahead of its time. So I think that idea of these buildings really engaged and brought the community together. And I think a lot of those types of spaces aren't there any longer. We tend to focus more on tourism, about bringing people to our beaches, our hotels, and our restaurants, which is great because we, our businesses need those. But I think we also need to create a vital community for the people who live here.
Absolutely. So how much do you want to get into a little bit of these stories? Like you say, Rockaway has a storied history. And so do you want to give a little teaser about what some of those juicy tidbits are?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one chapter in the book that is Rockaway. I honestly could have written the whole book. In fact, a few years ago, I actually developed a campaign for tourism because I thought it was important that we start to tell those stories. And again, just for people to understand, you know, what Rockaway was like in the 1920s when we had, you know, dance halls, you know, the rec center, which became a bowling alley, a roller skating rink. The Sand Dollar Restaurant, which used to be the arcade where all the kids would hang out. A lot of the original buildings are still there. Like I said, to tell people that, you know, the pool to the natatorium is below the wayside, or, you know, some of the original buildings, it's great when you see them visually, you can see them because they're still standing, but you'll see a big parking lot where the natatorium used to be. But there's also great local stories. There's very interesting characters. There's, you know, the shipwreck of the Emily G. Reed. You know, there's a, you know, a ghost at Grumpy's, I'll tell you, a very benevolent ghost, very friendly ghost. There's just so many interesting stories that have come forward that the locals talk about that, again, many people who visit here don't understand or haven't heard about them. And I think once they do hear about them, it creates a certain, you know, allure and really brings some dimension to these coastal communities. I think that we're much more than just the places where people come to the beach. We actually are communities that have rich, interesting, vibrant histories that people need to understand, but also that we can help to learn from and say, hey, because I'm certainly not an advocate to say let's build the natatorium, but let's understand what the concept of a natatorium was as a community hub, and how could a natatorium be a reimagined for our community today. And for many of the communities where I think they're missing those things where the locals can come together, gather, and really support and build each other, and also support the local businesses.
Yeah, that's great. Let's see. You said that you think the NCRD is kind of the closest equivalent to that now. Let's talk a little bit. Can I ask you about Bay Ocean?
Sure.
This was something that I learned about maybe a couple of years ago, but do you want to give a brief synopsis of what happened to the town of Bay Ocean?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because as I was working on the historic Coast Guard boathouse, it used to be known as Pier's End, so it's the old boathouse that sits in the middle of Tillamook Bay off a 700-foot pier, and it had been closed for years. I kind of came in and helped to create a vision and kind of reimagine what this building could be. But it's interesting, as I started to get more familiar with Garibaldi, and I didn't know very much about it, and it's interesting, as you look out the windows of the historic boathouse, there is so much history and stories there to be found. So I actually, in the year 2018 and 2019, I curated a gallery there to start to tell some of those stories. And currently, if you go down to the boathouse when it is open, you'll see there is a story of the Bay Ocean. There's a story of Barview Station, which is the original Coast Guard station. There's a story of the old smokestack, the Garibaldi smokestack, or otherwise known as the Whitney Mill chimney, that many locals don't even know why that chimney was built so high. So Bay Ocean, I think, is one of the most fascinating stories on the Oregon coast because, you know, it's kind of a bit of a very famous tragedy. It was a designed resort community by a developer back in 1906, if I recall, when it was started by Potter, who was the developer. And he had a vision to create the Atlantic City of the Oregon coast. And he was very successful at doing it. He had built, there's a spit of, it's called now the Bay Ocean Spit, and it actually is a county park, and you can hike out to it, and you can actually see markers for the original homestead. But back in 1906, it was developed as a resort community. People would take the Bay Ocean liner from Portland. I think it was 3.5 days to get out to Bay Ocean. And he sold all the plots of land were sold. At its height, there were 2,000 people living there. It also had a beautiful oceanfront natatorium, a hotel, a huge downtown area, schools, churches, etc. However, the engineers who worked with the developer on developing that plot of land had made two vital recommendations, and they were both involving the same thing. You need to build a jetty, both north end and south end, to be able to control the flow and the currents of the ocean that are coming into the bay. Well, when all the pricing came in on this jetty, it came in at over $2 million. And imagine this is probably around 1910, like I said, as the town was kind of fully developed, people had built their homes. And so $2 million to the residents where they wanted them to pay half was like just too much money. So they came to agreement that they would build one jetty. And that is what I refer to as the fatal flaw, or as I'll call it, the self-induced erosion. So with the one jetty, it started to change the flow of water and the current started to wash away. It actually originally breached the ocean side, which is where the natatorium is. And it was the first building that was washed out. But over a period of, 20, 30 years, it eventually washed over the entire Bay Ocean land. By the time it was done, it was actually an island. The last building fell into the ocean in 1960, which is the last home. A couple of homes were relocated. But the last building was a garage, and I think it was 1970 where it fell into the ocean. So it was a fantastic dream of a developer and a community that, really had a vision to create this sort of high-end, prestigious resort area. But a fatal mistake by not understanding the power of the ocean led to its demise. And there's a great OPB special on it, and there's books written on Bay Ocean, but it's a fascinating story. And going back to how I started, you can look out the windows of the boathouse and you can see the Bay Ocean Spit on the right-hand side. And you can actually drive out to Bay Ocean, and there is now a jetty that will take you out to the county park. So, and there's organized hikes every now and then where you can go out and have a curator lead you through what happened there, and there are markers of the building. So it's quite a fascinating piece of history, and it's also an amazing hike to get out and explore this area.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is The Conversation on KMUN. I'm Graham, and my guest today is Mike. Tell me how to pronounce your last name.
It's Arsenault.
Arsenault. Yes. It's got a T at the end, but it's silent. So, Mike is talking about his new book called Storytelling, and it focuses on stories of the Oregon coast, centered in Rockaway, but moving north to the Column in Astoria and south into Garibaldi, Bay Ocean. And I think it might be time to hear from some folks out there in the wide world. 503-325-0010. Maybe you have a particularly fun or interesting story about the Oregon coast, something of a historical nature, or maybe you want to hear more about one of the topics that Mike has written about. I do encourage you to get his book. It's fascinating, and like he said, there's lots of fantastic historical photographs in there, modern photographs as well, and so you can learn about all these incredible historic places up and down the North Oregon coast. So 503-325-0010 is the number to call, and if you'd like to participate in today's icebreaker, we're asking what your favorite childhood story was, or who your favorite childhood storyteller was. So while you're thinking about those answers or a story of your own about the Oregon coast, I'm going to cut to a little bit of music, and we'll be back in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in. Bird's Lament by Moondog. Welcome back to the conversation. Author Mike Arsenault has a book called Storytelling, and he says, I created this storybook of images and anecdotes as a keepsake to offer inspiration to others and share my belief that preserving the past is important to our culture and critical to building a connected and progressive community. You mentioned that building community spaces like natatoriums could help create a progressive community, but what else is part of that vision for you, Mike? What does a progressive or connected community look like?
I think sort of diversity. I think when I think about the arts, so again, when I moved out here, there wasn't a lot of live theater. There's obviously some good theater happening in Kappa, and which is in Tillamook, and at the Coaster Theater. And I've actually been up to theater as well in Astoria, which is fantastic, and performed up there a couple of years ago. But I think the arts, in any way we can to celebrate local artists and the different types of arts, both theater arts, music, any kind of art. I've been involved and created a group called the Nehalem Bay Artists just to help bring and connect artists together. And then have also supported them through exhibitions that I've done across the county to allow more artists to share their work, which is inspiring, which I think is a way of continuing to, again, my singular focus has really been to elevate arts and culture. And also the other thing that I have a big social media group called Rockaway Beach Foodies, which I started. And the goal of that was really to connect people and understand the culture behind food. But it also has now evolved to, we have our first post-COVID foodies event coming up, which sold out in a day. And it's a way of bringing people together and connecting communities through food, but also it's a great way to support the ecosystem of all the restaurants, the food providers, the growers, the fishermen on the coast. So that's, I think, those, you know, arts, culture, food, and heritage are the things that I've really been focused on. And I think they're not really done a lot out here. And I just think that was something that fascinated me. And I thought by doing it, I've discovered that a lot of people also enjoy it as well.
Now, one of your favorite places on the coast is the Garibaldi Historic Boathouse. It sounds like you've done some work there to help preserve it. And it also happens to be the location of your book launch, which is on July 31st at 1 p.m. That's at the Garibaldi Historic Boathouse. And what can folks expect if they plan to come to your book launch?
Yeah, thanks. At first, it is a very important building to me. I was involved in a variety of ways. I was first brought in to help the nonprofit that was set up, who were leading preservation efforts. But their real vision was to tell the stories of Tillamook Bay, and they didn't have a clear vision for what they wanted to use the boathouse for. So that's where I kind of brought this idea of it can become a community hub as well. So we have a lot of fantastic museums out here, and in Garibaldi, there's the Maritime Museum that tells a lot of the maritime history. So I didn't think it was important to like turn it into another museum, although I think museums have tremendous value. So what we did is we opened it up and we did a variety of events. So first we had a photography exhibit that was 10 photographers that sort of shot the boathouse during the day from 9 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night to see the condition it was in, how beautiful it was, and to help people understand why it was important to restore it. Since then, we've also been very anchored in the Coast Guard. So what used to be called Pier's End has been now rebranded to the historic U.S. Coast Guard Boathouse. For the first summer, it was open and did a variety of educational events. Many of the students in Tillamook County have done field trips there to study the ecology of the bay. We've done food events. We've done art events. Every live music event. This summer, it's only been open during the long weekends. So it's, you know, a lot of people haven't seen who may not have been to the coast for a little while, haven't seen the restoration and how unique this building is. So you can still see the rails. The rails are still installed of where the 36-foot motor lifeboats used to launch into the bay to do all the life saving. And then there is a gallery in there that I also created that tells some of those stories, specifically that I talked about earlier, the Barview Station, which is a little bit further north in Barview, which is now abandoned, the story of Bay Ocean, and then also the Whitney Mill Chimney or the Garibaldi Smokestack. So Yeah, I will be there on Saturday at 1 o'clock. It's going to be just a fun Q&A with a good friend of mine who's known me for years. And just, again, similar to what we're doing here, just talk about what my inspiration was, help people to understand the importance of some of these stories and also to share their own. These are not all the stories. You know, the goal is, again, through the Facebook group, storytelling and creative projects by Recreate Now, I'm continuing to share out more stories. I'll obviously be selling and signing books and also making a donation for every book sold to the Garibaldi Cultural Heritage Initiative, which is the nonprofit that is set up to help restoration efforts. So it's a unique building. It was built in 1936. It is the last of its kind on the Oregon coast, and its setting, sitting in the middle of Tillamook Bay, is hard to beat. So it's easy to get to if you're driving south. As you turn into Garibaldi, turn on South 12th, and it will take you down to the parking lot, which is at the bottom of the pier. It is also one of the top crabbing and clamming destinations in the county. So lots of great stories there, and I'm excited to see people and to meet new people and share the project that I've done, and hopefully inspire more people to step up. Like I said, the overarching theme of the book is, as you started the interview, is like to understand the past, we actually have the ability and the opportunity to create a future. So I think everyone can step up and take a part in that.
Yeah, sounds like you've got your weekend figured out. That's Saturday. That's this Saturday, July 31st, 1 p.m. at the historic Coast Guard Boathouse in Garibaldi. And you're going to want to see the pictures in this book, because that natatorium in Bay Ocean was incredible.
Crazy.
Just
yeah.
An amazing, the interior picture is just mind blowing.
And it's crazy to imagine that all that they, I mean, they dotted the Oregon coast. I mean, there were two up in Seaside. I mean, it's still nice just to go up to the prom and walk and see the Seaside Aquarium and just imagine, because that is the last remaining natatorium. It was changed to the Seaside Aquarium, I believe, in 1937. But, you know, you can just imagine what those buildings represented. And they also, you know, recognize the past. And there's some great photographs on the outside as well as the inside of the aquarium, so you can see what those buildings were. But just the fact that, you know, a lot of the folks who grew up here have such vivid memories of, you know, in their childhood, like learning to swim, or, you know, bowling, you know, their first strike, or having their first date at a dance there. I mean, they're such great memories. And, you know, one of my, you know, firm believers is people will remember, you know, as Maya Angelou said, people will remember how you make them feel. And, you know, I really want to bring the heart of these stories to life, not just the history.
Nice. Yeah. Now, do you have a sense, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but when did the last one actually close? Like, when was the last time you could swim in an natatorium on the coast? Was that the 40s or the 50s or the 60s?
The ones that I have knowledge of, so the Rockaway Natatorium closed in 1967, but it had been abandoned earlier to that. I mean, I can tell young people will tell you that they used to sneak in there when it was all boarded up. So it was really the 60s when you saw the last of them. Mm-hmm. And again, so I think that would be, there's no other natatoriums existing today. And I think the idea of NCRD and the Halem is the closest to trying to accomplish what a natatorium. Obviously, it's not oceanfront and it's not heated saltwater swimming pool, but it is a community hub. It does have a pool. Many people have learned to swim there, but it also is a place that celebrates, promotes the arts and education and culture through the theater where Riverbed Players performs out of, as well as they bring in live acts and live, educational programs. So I think the idea of those types of spaces are kind of missing in Tillamook County. And my focus really, because I live in sort of this county, this is what I focused on, but I have a huge passion for, you know, north going up to Clatsop County. And, you know, I spent a lot of time up in Astoria because I think it has a very vital art scene. And I'd love to do more things up there. And again, during the pandemic, I actually contacted the Liberty Theater because, again, I've been a theater performer for 30 years as well. And I really wanted to tell their story and include it, because I think it was, you know, this idea of these beautiful old theaters that have been lost, but the fact that, you know, that there is a huge restoration effort that has gone into preserving that theater. So they invited me up during COVID with a mask to give me a private tour, and you know, it was a really a highlight for me just to be there and to also include it in this book and tell its story. And also to encourage people, like, these, a lot of these projects aren't done. I mean, the boathouse, all of these buildings are ongoing. They still need funding. They still need resources. They still need volunteers, which is probably one of the biggest challenges out here.
Mm-hmm.
People who can step up and help, you know, when we're doing open houses or whatever. So I think it's really continuing. So in the book, I also include links to a lot of the, you know, where people can find out more or where they can donate to these organizations. So I think it's important that we continue to give back.
If you're just joining us, it's The Conversation on KMUN. And my guest is Mike Arsenault, whose book Storytelling just released. And he's got a book launch on Saturday, July 31st at 1 p.m. at the Garibaldi Historic Boathouse. He'll be there to do a Q&A and sign some books and chat and meet with you and share the love and affinity for the historic places on the Oregon coast. And just to remind you, this is a live and local call-in show. We are live. We are local. And the phone number to call is 503-325-0010. I want to remind you that that this show doesn't exist without you calling in. So how about now? First-time callers? Anyone? Any old regulars? We still haven't heard from anyone yet today, and I know this always happens when we have a special guest. But to remind you, our icebreaker is favorite childhood story or storyteller. And Mike, how about you? Did you have a book that was the one that you just read over and over again, or the pictures meant the most to you? And
I mean, it's funny when you mentioned that. It's like, oh, what? I mean, I always go back, and this is probably me, but I mean, I don't want to give away my age, but I mean, Dr. Seuss was probably my hero as a child,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, I think just his wackiness and the fact that it was, again, just such a visual story, whether it, you know, it is, you know, The Cat in the Hat or Green Eggs and Ham. I just found those so entertaining. But I also was fascinated by sort of stories like, you know, The Jungle Book and Mowgli and, you know, that idea of adventurers at young age going out and seeing the world. So those are the books that I look back at. I'm sure there'd be a whole list, but they tend to be sort of, you know, adventures and things that are engaging visually that also, I think, a bit wacky. Like, you know, I think like things that are a little bit different and not just traditional.
Yeah, it's interesting the ways that you can combine, you know, whether the story is just humans and humans, or is it humans and animals like Jungle Book, or is it all animals that are wearing human clothes and doing their things? We talked a bit about comics last week and how Gary Larson just would put animals into human contexts, and then all of a sudden it's funny.
But
lots of room for imagination and growth. And
obviously Disney and everything that Disney has done with, mm-hmm. you know, their animal, you know, characters and animation has been, you know, very just inspiring. It just helps you realize like what's possible and, you know, and that we can attach emotion and feeling and love for anything.
Yeah. I did a little digging on what storytelling means to people. And while we're waiting for your calls to come in, looks like the phone is ringing now. Look forward to chatting with you. Telling stories is one of the most powerful means that we have to influence, teach, and inspire. What makes storytelling so effective for learning? For starters, storytelling forges connections among people and between people and ideas. Stories convey the culture, history, and values that unite people. And that definitely seems true for the work you're doing, Mike. We've got a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, I called in because you said you didn't have any callers.
Yes, thank you so much for participating in the conversation today. Do you have an answer for our icebreaker?
Was it about the childhood stories?
I
turned off the radio.
Yeah, do you have a favorite childhood story?
Actually, I don't remember any childhood stories. What I do remember is being... I was in Job Corps when I was 14, and I went... I was in high school, and I worked at the elementary school that I'd gone to my whole childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked 4 days at the library in my old elementary school, and I discovered an anthology of science fiction books. And that is where I met Ray Bradbury and Theodore Sturgeon and Isaac Asimov, and so science fiction was my first exciting turn on to books.
Very cool.
I mean,
what age would you have been at that time?
I don't remember any of my childhood books at all, but short story science fiction.
So when,
I don't know
when you got introduced to that.
I read all my kids.
Were you in your teens then, or how old were you when you discovered science fiction?
14.
14.
It was in the elementary school library where I worked for 4 hours each day. I attended high school 4 hours, and then I walked the 3 miles back to my elementary school and worked in the library there for 4 hours. Now my oldest daughter, who's about to turn 40 on August 4th, works at Multnomah County Library.
Great.
And she started volunteering at the Cannon Beach Library when she was 13 and 14. So the love of books and the love of story, well, as you can tell, I love story. And mm-hmm. So, but I don't remember anybody ever reading to me.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I remember learning to read, and so doing a lot of the reading myself, I don't remember being read to very much. But I did have that one experience in sixth grade where we had a storyteller who told really amazing stories, and they were very engaging and, you know, always had a lesson at the end.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh, it's okay.
Actually, I do have a story of someone reading to me. My first husband wooed me by reading Winnie the Pooh to me, and it was the first time I ever heard it. And I was 19 years old, and I had just had my wisdom tooth pulled out, and he came over, he brought me a coloring book, and read to me from Winnie the Pooh.
That's so nice.
And it was the beginning of a long love affair with Billy.
Now, how long have you been a resident on the Oregon coast?
On and off for 40 years. This is my first time living in Astoria, but I've listened to KMUN since, Doug. I don't even know the beginning. Doug Sweet used to have the Bald Eagle in Cannon Beach?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Then is when I started listening.
That's great. Well, Doug is still a good friend of the station, and I get the opportunity to talk with him every now and then, and it's just great to have all these wonderful people that have been involved with the station for so long. You know, the station is a storytelling entity of sorts. I was telling Mike that we feature bedtime stories 5 nights a week for the young ones, so we take the storytelling thing pretty seriously around here.
I know that. I know it, and I absolutely love it. I've probably taken up enough of your time, though.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing. I love your program.
Thanks for the call.
I love all the programs there, actually. So.
Well, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we've got another person who has called in. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Grandma, I have a little bit – I had a hard time – as the lady just previously said, with stories and books. But I remember my dad, when I was really young, singing Puff the Magic Dragon
mm-hmm.
story. And so that would be a memory that I would have for stories in that. And another one that I had with my daughter in 1988 at the convention center, Glenn Yarbrough did the Forgotten Christmas Carols. And it wasn't a really big advertised presentation. And he did it, I think, out of the kindness of his heart more than anything else. We had a really low participation. It was a stormy night. It was not good at all. But the stories that he sang and the stories that he presented, I thought were really excellent.
And these were not your typical Christmas carols, then, eh?
No. These are what they call the forgotten carols, and it was. I have the disc somewhere. Daughter and I kind of reminisce about that every other day. So.
Well, that's the nice thing about storytelling is that it helps you to remember. And, you know, it's good to not forget these stories.
Very, very true.
Well, hey, thanks for the call. Anything else for us today?
No, and I appreciate, but I appreciated the Bay Ocean story. I was a Schwann's man for that area for a lot of, and I listened to a lot of the stories that people lived who live around that area, out in Oceanside and things like that, and I appreciated those this morning.
That's a new one for me. Can you tell me what a Schwann's man was?
Schwann's?
Yeah.
You've never had the Schwann's man come to your house?
Not to my knowledge.
A small Minnesota town, a dairy person, Marvin Schwann, in the 45 to 47 year area, had a really hard time selling his milk to the people roundabout. And so he started a business, family business, to distribute those milk and ice cream products and novelty items. And he built up a home delivery. Every 2 weeks, a truck would come and you would order things off of the truck. And it grew to be the fifth largest privately held company in the nation.
Well, I'll be darned. He's like an early Jeff Bezos.
Mr. Schwann also bought a pizza plant that was going under, and that's where Tony's Pizza, Red Baron Pizza, Ming Egg Roll Company, those products like that came out on the wholesale side in the stores and things like that. So,
well, thanks for sharing a little bit of your story today.
Yeah, and it was kind of cool, and I always had it. One of the nice things about that was that I would the plant or the distribution point was over in Sherwood, and so I would get up in Seaside and drive over to Sherwood, pick up the truck, and then on the south routes, when I was talking about the Tillamook, I had two route days in Tillamook County, and as I would come over the hill, I would listen to KTIL from 9 to 9:30, and at 10 o'clock, then I could listen to KMUN because you guys have that translator down there. So,
absolutely. 89.5 in Tillamook.
Exactly, and I appreciated that. So keep those airwaves flying.
Oh, we sure will. Making waves since 1983 and for many more years to come.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call. Goodbye. If you're just tuning in, it's The Conversation on KMUN, and the topic of the day is storytelling. I've got a guest named Mike Arsenault, whose book Storytelling was just released, and you can meet him in person and have a chat at his book release on July 31st, 1 p.m. at the historic boathouse in Garibaldi. Mike, how about the Astoria column?
I love the Astoria column, but I want to call out, I'd like to thank the last call and
sure.
For mentioning Puff the Magic Dragon. I was very young, but I definitely do remember it. And so I thought that was great. It's great to hear people's stories and their memories and how much affection is attached to those.
Well, I'll tag on to that one. When I was in third grade, the local owner of the guitar shop named Caleb's, he came into my third grade class and sang Puff the Magic Dragon.
Exactly.
And that ended up being the guitar store where I got my first guitar and learned took
there
lessons
you go.
And stuff. So yeah,
it all starts right. So I just remember it being such a wacky show, but I don't remember it very much. I was very young, but it's like, yeah, what a happy memory.
Good. All right. So what were you going to tell me about the column?
Yeah. So I mean, it's just one of the places that I think is unique because of its, you know, of its location. I've been there a few times, and actually I just have great memories of going up there before COVID and climbing up to the top and shooting off the little airplane like everyone does. But I also love the investment that they've done in terms of all of the beautiful design around, you know, the illustrations that have been redone and the restoration that's taking place. It's just an iconic building with an iconic structure with iconic views, and I kind of compare it to the Garibaldi smokestack, which is probably one of the, you know, which is also featured in the book, but it's probably one of the last remaining tallest single standing structures in Oregon coast. And, you know, I don't know what its future will be because it doesn't really have a lot of other purposes other than it's standing there. And there has been some efforts to try and secure it through fiberglassing on the interior, but eventually it will, you know, have to be destroyed just because of safety. But, yeah, so I think that all of these places, whether it's the Astoria column or as the locals have told me, the Astor column, and I love the connection back to the Astor family as well. I think they're all super interesting. And I think Astoria is just such a great, there's so much amazing architecture, so much very robust artist scene. I have several artists that work up there that I've worked with that I kind of embrace that community. And I'm definitely love to get up there whenever I can.
The arts and culture bring so much to our lives. And so it's good to have you as a participant, and it's great to have places like the Liberty Theater and the NCRD and all these organizations that support and cultivate the arts and culture. We had someone call in on line one. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling to let people know that there's something online called StoryWorth. And I was gifted this, I don't know what you would call it. It's a service that someone is providing to let people have their stories written down and turned into books. I got this for Mother's Day in May. And every week I get a email from this company, and I'm supposed to write down stories. You know, it could be family histories. They send you prompts, you know, questions that you can either use or not use. And it has given me an opportunity to put my stories down for future generations. And I love it. It's been kind of difficult for me to, you know, be disciplined and write every week. I'm kind of behind. But it's going to be really wonderful. After a year, you know, you can put submit photographs along with your stories, and it's quite an interesting, neat thing. I've got a book that is just going to be of the miracles that I've experienced in my life. I've got about at least 20 to 25 miracles. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that be published.
Well, that sounds like a really amazing service, and I'm glad that you're being pushed to write every week. I think that's a really healthy thing to do, even if it doesn't turn into a book. But that sounds really special.
People should look into it, maybe get it for their, you know, parents or their grandparents or themselves.
Yes.
Story worth.
Story.
Not that I'm plugging this company, but it's pretty interesting.
You said story words, right?
Yes, one word.
Okay, well, that seems like a great thing for folks to check out. Thank you so much for that information.
Thank you for being there.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we've got another caller on line two. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
That's you. Go ahead.
Okay. This is Debbie, and it's kind of an interesting topic because I'm actually on my way home from my childhood home in Jewell. I stopped here at Olney School to call you because you're talking about storytellers. I grew up with both grandparents, both sets of grandparents very close to me, and all four of them were amazing storytellers.
Now, I'm sure I don't need to tell folks, but this is Debbie, a.k.a. Bedtime Stories Debbie, Skinnamarink Debbie. So we've got a storyteller on the line, folks. Go ahead, Debbie.
Well, my granddad was a really interesting character, and he grew up. Would you like to hear one of his old stories? It's pretty short.
Yeah, we've got 9 minutes and one other caller.
Oh, it's much shorter than that. This was our favorite story. All three of myself and my two siblings, and sometimes my five cousins, would all be around my granddad and beg him for this story over and over again about when he used to work at a logging camp. And, okay, this is crazy that this was a bunch of little kids' favorite story. But there, he would tell us about the horrible accidents at the logging camp. And our favorite one was about one time a cable broke loose, decapitated some man, and my grandfather would show us what this man's head did when it was separated from his body and make this grotesque face. And all five of us little kids loved that story, and I hadn't thought of that until today.
Well, I'll be darned. Yeah, the kids.
Isn't that awful? He also told us about how one of the logging camps, they had a pet bear. So that you would think that would be more of our favorite, hearing stories about the pet bear. But we loved that disgusting story about the man who lost his poor head.
Well, that is something that will certainly make your imagination run wild, right?
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for pulling up the memories as I'm driving home here after a few days out with my mother, who's now 92 and is forgetting all of her stories.
Oh, no. Well, thanks for being a storyteller and for calling in today.
Okay. Thanks, you guys. It sounds like an awesome book. I'm looking forward to finding a copy of that.
Great. Bye, Debbie.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And with about 5 minutes left in the show, we've got, I think, who will be our last caller for the day. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I have a story told to me from further up the Jewel, the Nehalem River Valley, from a family that worked at the Flavel House and as a maid. And I was on a historical tour, so I got to see the attic floor where all the bedrooms were for the people that worked there. And I also got up into that turret that goes way up in the air. And so this person's aunt worked there, and they were upstairs, and this figure comes out of the bell tower. It's not the bell tower, the turret. I don't know what you call it. Her hair was loose and flying around her face, and gossamer robes, and she kind of floated by, and they were sure it was a ghost. They were scared to death until they realized it was, would you say, Mrs. Captain Flavel looking for her husband coming over the bar. And I thought that was a cute story.
So you're saying that the ghost was looking for her husband, or this was her?
It was her.
Oh, wow.
Coming out of, what do you call that architectural thing that's way up in the air on the Flavel House?
Turret and bell tower both work great for me.
I
knew just what you meant.
Yes. I have a longer story. I don't know if we have enough time for a little bit more.
Yep, a little bit more.
So as a child, there was an anthropologist, Clyde Kluckhohn, who lived with the Navajo Indians for many, many years. And he would come. My father was an anthropologist. They were good friends. And Clyde would tell us witch stories, Navajo witch stories. And then one time my brother, also an anthropologist, invited Tony Hillerman, a mystery writer set in Navajo country, a wonderful writer and very nice man, was invited to my brother's university, and I heard him talk, and I asked him after if he had known Clyde Kluckhohn. And he said, no, they were writing, but Clyde had died before they could get together. And one of the letters Clyde had, as a joke, complained that a woman wrote to Clyde saying that this Blessing Way book that was so well recommended was just dry and terrible. And Tony Hillerman had also written a book, The Blessing Way, that's another one of his wonderful mysteries. And the woman was confused over which writer had written both books. But it was sweet to hear Tony Hillerman give me that story about Clyde Kluckhohn getting the letter about the woman complaining. I probably got lost in my telling of the story, but it's a fond memory I have.
That sounds great. Well, hey, I'm curious, Suzanne, are you calling on a cell phone or a landline today?
Oh, my Jewel landline isn't very good.
A little bit of a buzz to it, but
yeah.
We heard everything you said.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I think it's about time to wrap things up, talking with Mike Arsenault here. And I don't need to tell you this, but the benefits of storytelling for kids especially are almost limitless. You can instill virtue, you can improve their listening skills, you can foster imaginations, you can increase cultural understanding, you can enhance communication skills, sharpen memory, make learning easier, improve social skills. The list goes on and on. And don't forget that when you're telling a story, a picture tells 1,000 words as well. And so the new book, Storytelling by Mike Arsenault, is rich with both stories, history, culture, and really amazing photography as well. So, Mike, I'm so glad you could join us today. One last mention of the book launch. Are you calling it a book launch because that's what we call it, or because you're at the boathouse where they used to launch boats?
Yeah, no, just adding on to your note, I think, one of the things that we can also do is just listen to our elders, listen to the people and the generations that came before us, because those stories can't be forgotten. They have to be continued on from generation to generation. So part of the book storytelling is to do that, is to allow people to share it with their kids, their grandkids. So coming up, on July 31st is the official launch of my book, Storytelling at the Garibaldi Historic Boathouse. And people who can't attend that, I will also be doing a book discussion at the Hoffman Center in Manzanita on August 8th at 4 p.m. And also be doing a signing at Simply Charming in Rockaway Beach on August 11th at 1 p.m. And I also will be doing an event coming up at the Garibaldi Maritime Museum. The date is still to be confirmed. So it's been a real joy to be here, and I really thank you guys for your interest and for your programming to support and promote storytelling of all types, because I think it's critical to building a connected and enriched community.
Absolutely. Well said, well put, and we're so glad that we could have you on the air and wish you the best with your book and everything else.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Graham.
We'll see you around.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and calling into the conversation today. You're listening to KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, streaming live on the web at coastradio.org, and on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. Going to end the hour with just a little bit of music from Mark Knopfler.